A SWAT team commissioned by the Ohio Department of Agriculture held a Storrs family at gunpoint for hours while here tearing a farmhouse apart searching for the evidence. The Storrs' crime? Selling farm fresh foods to family and friends. The Storrs family and others like them lead us to ask, should farmers be allowed to sell their farm fresh foods to us?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 617th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in La Paz who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Ricochet on the board. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello, everyone.
Parmalee Taft.
Hello.
Folks, early this month in Lorain County, Ohio, the John and Jacqueline Storrs family was held at gunpoint while a State Department of Agriculture Commission SWAT team of some 12 to 13 members held them at gunpoint while tearing their house apart looking for evidence. The Storrs' crime, selling their farm fresh foods to family and friends. Earlier this year in Mount Holly Springs, Pennsylvania, another armed SWAT team raided the farm of Mark Nolt, confiscating his equipment and property and leaving him with a $4,000 fine. Also this year in California, undercover agents from the United States Food and Agriculture Administration made an unsuccessful attempt to entice Amanda Hall, a 23-year-old mother and employee of Organic Pastures Dairy, into secretly recording conversations with her employer, Mark McAfee. Mark McAfee's crime? Selling farm fresh foods to friends and neighbors across state lines. This criminal behavior of these farmers leads us to ask, should farmers be allowed to sell us their farm fresh foods, or should we be forced to buy all of our foods from government-sanctioned corporations? Here to help us in our investigation today, we have attorney Steve Bemis, who is with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Steve, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you aboard. You're a corporate attorney. You work for a corporation during your day job and help the corporation get by in the world. And in the evenings and on the weekends, you volunteer with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, right?
That's right.
I guess they call that in legal terms the pro bono stuff.
Well, that's the way I'm doing it. We do have some attorneys who appear in court every day and do the heavy lifting.
Okay, good.
We need memberships to help pay them. But
well, let's talk a little bit about the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Exactly what is it?
Okay, the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund was open for business on July 4th, a special day in 2007. Mm-hmm. It was formed along the model of the homeschooling legal defense fund, which over the years had been very successful in helping people who wanted to homeschool kind of climb the mountain of regulations and truancy laws and other things mm-hmm. Affecting that activity. And we thought this might be a good model to offer memberships to farmers and to consumers who would be willing to support the efforts to turn back some of these laws and pressures that small farmers feel.
So I take it you don't get any sponsorship from, like, Monsanto or anybody like that, right?
Not Monsanto, no.
No. Well, who does pay the way? Well, that we always ask.
The organization is funded, as I said, primarily by $125 memberships that farmers can buy, mm-hmm. and this gets them legal assistance if they need it, and by consumers for a $50 annual membership fee, consumers who believe in this and want to support this. We also have assistance on occasion from a sister organization, the Farm to Consumer Foundation, which is K can accept tax deductible contributions.
Okay.
There are. We've also received some substantial donations from folks who really believe in what's going on.
Good. Well, how did you get involved in this, Steve? Is, I mean, a corporate attorney, busy guy, making the big bucks in corporate law, and here you're out helping little farmers. How did you make that transition?
Well, it was just really a personal journey. My wife had convinced me, obviously, of the importance to improve my diet many years ago, and we had started drinking raw, unpasteurized milk. I live in Michigan, and in Michigan, the sale of raw milk is illegal. However, there's what's called a cow share arrangement, where you actually buy a part of a cow, a share in a cow, and therefore you're a farmer, and therefore you can get the benefit of your cow's milk. So we had that arrangement, and we were getting our raw milk from a in a co-op arrangement pursuant to cow shares. Our farmer one day on his deliveries into Ann Arbor was stopped on I-94, and his raw milk and other meats and vegetables and other things that he provides our co-op were all confiscated. So this was my supply of raw milk, and I had a personal interest, and I started...
You're taking my milk!
Yeah. Started getting involved to see if I could help. I did. My area of practice in the corporate environment has had some litigation experience, and I thought, well, maybe I can help here. And a long story made short was that I did help then get a settlement of this farmer's situation with the Michigan Department of Agriculture. And in the process, we were able to actually open a dialogue with the Michigan Department of Agriculture, which continues. Hopefully, we'll see it lead in the future to some more liberalized laws on raw milk. It's been a good dialogue, and we also clarified the situation for cow shares in Michigan. So that was my start.
So it was very personal. Well, I should say that not with us today are representatives from the United States Food and Drug Administration.
Right.
I tried to get somebody from U.S. FDA to join us today to talk about the situation, but was told, in quote, no experts are available on this subject. I also tried to contact the DA's office in Lorain County, Ohio, and have them comment on the taking down of the Stowers family, and they said that it's not appropriate for them to discuss this. So I just kind of gave up on finding somebody from the government, from any size of government. It seems like all kinds of governments are involved in this getting rid of farmers, I guess, is what they're trying to do. It seems like it's federal, state, and local governments are pretty much involved in this. So let me ask you, why is there a need for a farm-to-consumer legal defense fund? I was raised on a farm. We had raw milk. nobody ever got sick from it. And I just look at the situation that there is such a thing as a farm-to-consumer legal defense fund and scratch my head. What on earth have we flipped our lids, Steve?
Yeah, it's it certainly is a sad commentary on the situation that we have in this country, that our services would be needed. The entire regulatory framework is tilted towards really big operations. The laws that are on the books are primarily of three kinds. One is there are model federal laws, of course. And they all come from, you know, we all read in high school Upton Sinclair's The Jungle a century ago, where he exposed terrible situations in
the meatpacking.
That caused a huge decline in the consumption of meat 100 years ago because people read that book and said, my goodness, what am I eating?
All right.
Actually, corporate the result of that was a lot of regulation and large corporate meat packers and other food purveyors over the years actually welcomed those laws because they provide a foundation upon which they can build their business.
And they can eliminate a lot of competition, right?
Well, exactly. That's the way it's been for many, many years. When we were growing up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break, Steve. When we come back, we'll pick this up, and they'll follow it up. And we'll also go to the phones. What do you think out there? Should farmers be allowed to sell us their farm-fresh foods? Or should we be forced to buy them from somebody else? Sanctioned by the government. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Please do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, what do you think out there? The federal government, the state governments, the county governments are all seem to be in trouble with respect to small farms selling their foods directly to you and I. Do you think farmers should be allowed to sell us their foods? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have with us today Attorney Steve Bemis for the Farm from the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. And we're asking, why on earth do we need such a thing as a farm-to-consumer legal defense fund? This has got to be something new, Steve.
Well, we are pretty new. As I said, we were founded July 4th, 2007. We saw a need because, as I said, the whole regulatory framework is founded really on big. And as many people have been finding out, big is not necessarily the best way to get your food, and the small farmer needs help in many cases to fight through this regulatory framework, which is tilted so much toward big. A lot of these regulations make no sense for the small operation,
and impossible to fund for small operations too.
Yeah.
Let's pick up a quick phone call today, folks. The phone number is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're inviting you to join us. Do you think farmers should have the right to sell us their foods? Let's go to Mary. Mary, do you think the farmers should be able to sell us their food?
Oh, Michael, absolutely. This is the most appalling and yet another indicator of our government becoming more fascist and controlling than imaginable. Our founding forefathers would be appalled, I think they are rolling over in their graves as I'm hearing this.
Well, let's ask Steve if this is a deliberate thing from the government, or is it just because these rules were made for very big operators that it's, you know, nobody's really thinking about the small farmer, that they just get rolled over, or is it more deliberate, like Marlene is suggesting here?
Well, my guess is, depending on the particular situation, it could be either or both. Again, I think I always try to put myself in the regulator's shoes to figure out where they're coming from. And I can see regulators who really do believe that it's important that people have healthy food.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody believes that, right?
Well,
sure,
why aren't they taking taking care of the poisoning us with China food? I mean, is it just lazy government that just targets things that are not really an issue and refuses to address the poison in everything from our dog food on up? I don't understand.
And what you're talking
I
of?
I don't understand.
What you're talking, of course, is that we now have melamine
in everything
in baby foods. In baby formula.
Why doesn't our government take care of us there? Why are they messing with something that isn't broken? Is it because they are such cowards, and this is such an easy target, that they come in with a SWAT team? Are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
It was certainly an outrageous incident in Ohio. I totally agree. I don't know, their motivations are probably all over the map. We think that Big Ag is worried sometimes about the marginal, this very small but nevertheless worrisome inroads that small operations have. They tend to have a premium pricing structure. People pay more for this food than they do the supermarket food, and I'm sure businessmen in that industry look at that and say, boy, I want some of that high-margin stuff. Look at the way organic anything has exploded.
So that being the case, then they send in 13 armed sheriffs to take over this farm family's home.
Our government has literally become the enemy of its people. I'm going to let someone else call in, but I cannot believe that we as Americans have to stand by and listen to your program, Michael, time after time again, and no government agency is ever held accountable for their actions. They just move and mow through everything. It's just time and time again. How can we as Americans stop this? It's in every industry and everything that we do.
I guess that's what the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund is all about, right, Steve?
Yes, we've taken some affirmative actions as well as defensive actions. In the Stowers case, for example, we have joined with the Buckeye Institute in Ohio as co-counsel to sue the officials responsible. Now, that's a defensive action. We've also filed a very large and important lawsuit against the United States Department of Agriculture and the Michigan Department of Agriculture over the so-called National Animal Identification System, which again is a giant computer in the sky, which is organized in such a way to supposedly keep track of every farm animal on the face of this country. For supposedly for animal disease purposes, but its net effect is to put a heavy burden on the small farmer who cannot effectively opt out of this system, notwithstanding.
So the way I understand the, and thank you for the call, Mary, by the way, appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Michael, for the show, and thank you, guest, for your work.
All right, good. Well, the way I understand the NAIS works, that if you have a herd of 10,000 goats, they count as one, but if you have three goats, they count as three.
Right. There's a huge exception for large CAFO, confined animal feeding operation type situations. It's more technical than that, but that's net effect.
Okay. Let's go to Chili Bob, who is a farmer. And Chili Bob, welcome to the food chain.
Well, good morning, Michael. Good morning.
Good. And you have a partial reason why they went after the Stowers family?
Knowing how government works, and by the way, I want to ditto the comments that Mary made earlier. Those are great. She's right on the ball. But
And you're speaking as a farmer, and Mary's speaking as a consumer.
Correct. Yes. But you look at it, you wonder the real reason why they did what they did. And I think if you go a little deeper, you're going to find out that they're probably concerned that this farmer may not be paying his income taxes. It's difficult to track the income. I mean, they're all cash transactions, more than likely. Mm-hmm. And they're using food safety and the health and concerns of the consumer as a reason to go in there and say, okay, we want to see your books now. We want to see how your your transactions, how are you taking care of all this? And if you think about it, it's a pretty easy way to make a lot of cash transactions that are not going to be recorded, which probably is what's necessary to keep that guy alive and keep him operating. But I mean, does your guest think that's a possible?
What a interesting comment. Thank you so much, Chili Bob. Steve, what do you think?
Well,
are the stores trying to avoid paying their fair share of taxes?
Well, I have no idea. I do some farming myself, and I know what Chili Bob is saying because a lot of things are done on handshakes and for cash. What you're supposed to do in those kinds of businesses is to simply record your transactions and pay your tax like mm-hmm. everyone else. I'm not certainly advocating that it's important to dodge taxes with cash transactions. There's lots of cash businesses that have those kinds of opportunities and, frankly, risks.
Chili Bob, why did you ask that question?
Why did I ask that?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that, you know, just knowing how the government operates and what the bottom line to just about everything is the almighty dollar and the ability to continue growing with more power. And if you look at, I just got an email about National Government Day, and is it July 6th or something like that? By the time you've paid all your taxes for the year, it's 53-point-something% of the year that you've worked in order to pay your taxes, and it's going to continue getting bigger and
bigger. Much bigger. Well, Chili Bob, let me ask you this. Do you think, as you're a farmer, do you think farmers should have the right to sell their farm fresh foods directly to me?
I think so. I don't see why not. I think the consumer has to go into this transaction with the understanding that and I don't want to make this sound facetious in a way, but that they're buying at their own risk.
Well, amen to that.
Yeah, when you're buying through a supermarket chain or, say, Costco or something like that, there's always that...
I'm going to have to pick that up when we come back.
Okay.
Please do stay tuned, 800-642-665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. Hey, welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. You know, on December 1st of this year, a SWAT team commissioned by the Ohio Department of Agriculture, 13 members, I guess, of this SWAT team, armed to the teeth with guns, invaded the home of the Stowers family at gunpoint and for hours held the family on the living room sofas, made them stay there for hours and hours and hours while they tore the family farmhouse apart looking for evidence. And the Stowers' crime? Selling farm fresh foods to friends and neighbors. A terrible crime indeed. And that's what we're exploring today. Should farmers be allowed to sell us their farm fresh foods? We have Steve Bemis with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and also Chili Bob is here with us, a farmer, a grower from the Salinas Valley. And Chili Bob brought up a very interesting comment with respect to sanitation, and suggesting that when you and I, as consumers, go to a farmer to buy farm fresh food, we must what, Chili Bob?
Well, you have to understand that you're not as protected as you are buying from chain stores, even though mm-hmm. I hate the word and everything, but it just the liability factor is questionable when you're buying directly from a farmer. It's hard to recover any problems that might arise from the consumption of their food. You don't know. I mean, you can always have legal recourse on a chain store or mm-hmm. or, well, like I said, something like Costco or something. You can go back after them, but for a problem, but. But
let me follow up on that for just a second before we go to Steve on the suggestion that you're safer going to the supermarket. I don't know about that because, you know, they're now finding melamine in the baby formula in our country that came from China. And I don't know who I would yell at the supermarket if I found it. Somehow, you know, I'm feeding a baby melamine-laced baby formula. Now, if I go to a farmer and they sell me dirty food, first of all, I think I'm going to figure it out because I'm looking into that person's eyes. And I got a pretty good notion of what's in the food by looking into those eyes. If that farmer's trying to cheat somehow and I... and they look me into the eye and convince me otherwise, I don't know. But and if I do get sick, you know, I can go back to that farmer. And
you're right, Michael.
Get my hands on them, you know.
Michael, you're right there. But the issue is also is there are rules and regulations that these larger companies are placing on the purchasing of their products, and mm-hmm. and we have to adhere to some pretty strict regulations. Now, are those regulations in place when you go directly to the farmer? They may or may not be. I mean, they're you know, I'm not saying the farmer is gonna do something wrong, but unintentionally he may, you
yeah.
know. And so it just it's not. I don't know.
It's not kind of a
tough situation.
Well, let me ask you this: as a farmer, do you think that the same rules should apply to somebody who's selling, you know, lettuce at the farmer's market as somebody who's selling lettuce through, you know, a large vertically integrated corporation?
No, I don't believe those rules should apply, but I think people buying that food should understand that those rules mm-hmm. aren't in place and let them make their own decision. That's what this country's all about.
Amen to that. Steve
yeah.
Bemis, how do you respond to that?
Well, I agree with the idea that when you're dealing directly with someone that you have the opportunity to see their operation, to see them, to have recourse
mm-hmm.
Directly against them. They may not be as financially as viable as some large corporation, but I guess I quarrel.
That's debatable these days.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I quarrel with the premise that there may be more risk because I think the security which is sold in the middle aisles of the grocery store in boxes and cellophane wrapped food is in many cases a false security, and that has to do not only with potential contamination from an acute instance, what I call acute, which would be a pathogen or something, because first of all that does occur. A lot of your deli meats and other things are swarming with pathogens. All sorts of chemicals are added to it to try to damp down those risks. But you have chronic issues in that food. And by chronic, I mean you eat it for your whole life, and you've got poorer health and greater risk from disease. So I guess I quarrel a little bit. And people who do deal directly with farmers know this. That's why they're making the choice. They're making an informed decision to accept to trade off one kind of risk, which I consider not to be particularly great, and to kiss off a much greater risk from the chronic risks. So.
Well, one of the big issues, of course, is raw unpasteurized milk. I mean, there seems to be, everybody seems to be terribly frightened, or at least in the established world of dairies, it seemed to be terribly frightened, and yet there seems to be a burgeoning demand for unpasteurized raw milk. A lot more people want it and are demanding it and are buying it however they can get it, sometimes like you, through buying clubs or co-ops or what have you. How dangerous is raw milk? You, Steve, said that two people died from drinking milk this year.
I'm not sure I said that. The deaths that have occurred in the recent years from milk were from pasteurized milk.
Ah.
They occurred in Massachusetts from a small operation that nevertheless pasteurized, and it appears that the milk was contaminated after pasteurization. Of course, that's the most dangerous time for pasteurized milk because it's been killed at that point. All enzyme activity mm-hmm. has been basically burned out of it by the pasteurization process. So if it becomes contaminated at that point, it's very risky because
yeah.
it's basically just a sugar medium for growth. The risk in raw milk is greater if there is contamination. And that means clean operations are important. There's a fundamental issue in this discussion which is important to note. That is, when people talk about raw milk, there's really two kinds of raw milk. One kind is the raw milk that is intended to be pasteurized, and that the other is the raw milk that has been starting with the way the cows are fed and milked, is intended not to be pasteurized. Now, I would never drink the raw milk out of a conventional dairy that's intended for pasteurization, because those operations rely on the kill step, which comes with pasteurization.
Oh, so they're not really too concerned about being clean because they know that they're going to be pasteurized. And
well, many of those operations are very clean, and I don't mean to just with a broad brush go after farmers who serve that market, because 99% of the country drinks pasteurized milk, and many of those people drink their own milk. Those farmers drink their own raw milk from their own bulk tank, and they are perfectly healthy folks.
Okay.
I know people like that.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Chili Bob and Steve Bemis and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Should farmers be allowed to sell you and I their farm fresh foods? Well, December 1st of this year, some 13 armed members of the Ohio State Police Department, commissioned at least by the Ohio State Department of Agriculture, forced their way into the Store family farmhouse in Ohio and forced the entire family to sit there for hours upon hours upon hours while the SWAT team went through the house and tore the place apart looking for evidence of selling food to people. My goodness, an incredible act, and yet it seems to be something that's happening around the country. And that's why the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund was formed. Carol, I think we lost our guest. Maybe you can pick him up again. It would be Steve Bemis. And with us also today, we have Chili Bob Martin from the Salinas Valley. Chili, I love your suggestion that there should be two ways of doing this. If we want to buy our food from supermarkets, we should have the right to expect that somebody is there watching over that food chain and making certain that things are safe. But on the other hand, if we're shopping for our food directly from a farmer, then we should be able to rely on that farmer, him or herself. We should be able to look at that and realize that we're not going to get those protections afforded by the government. That being the case, then why is the government so intent on going after these little farmers?
Well, they think they think they're doing their job. They think they're protecting us, and in essence, a lot of it is their concern about their income. And the way government is nowadays, Michael, you understand, with air, water, food safety, all the issues. Now, a lot of these agencies are left to fend on their own. Budget cuts. They're having to impose more fines in order to
subsidize
their department.
Oh, so like the Highway Patrol.
Yeah, it's their livelihoods they're after. They can't just sit at the desk anymore. They've got to go out and impose fines and actually enforce rules in order to justify their positions and keep their jobs. And so, you know, and that's the same. The fees and assessments and these things are all going up because of that. Because of the but going back to what Steve was saying, I read an article, a science article yesterday that basically states that unpasteurized milk there's no benefit. There's no health benefits to unpasteurized milk over pasteurized milk. But the risk is there. And I agree with him that dairies, they're not all that concerned about they don't have to be, because of the pasteurization process will kill the pathogens. But if you look at the nature of a cow and an udder and proximity to its hooves and where it walks before it's milked, it's a very, very possible danger that there's 0157870 E. coli on those udders. And when if they're not sanitized correctly before they stick the suction tube on there to draw the milk, guess what? It's going to be on that. It's going to go in that milk. And like you said, that sugar, the medium is just perfect for the growing of the pathogen. So
how do you respond to the fact that of the people who have died from drinking milk in the last few years, the two cases have been instances of pasteurized milk and not of unpasteurized milk?
Well, nothing's perfect, Michael, and we rely on the people to make sure that that the pasteurization process is correct, has been done correctly, and
mm-hmm.
There's always going to be something slip, and maybe the temperature wasn't adequate at that time, and something okay. slipped by, and that's what happened.
Yeah, Steve, we have Steve back. Steve, how do you respond to Chili Bob's notion that there should be two ways of doing things, that we should have, if we go to the supermarket, we should have the right to think that the government is there watching over us and protecting us, and that the rules apply, and so we should be safe. But then if we go to some farmer and look at that farmer's operation, we should have a different way a different expectation there.
Well, I agree with that, because my initial comments were that the system is set up now, the inspection and regulatory system is set up premised on huge operations. You have rules that require parking spaces and bathroom facilities for the USDA inspector.
Right.
That doesn't make sense for a small operation.
Then why is the government going after small operations then?
I think it's because there's no regulatory framework out there that they can use, which in this case for small farmers should be basically none, or some radically smaller version. They just don't have any tools, and part of what one of the many initiatives that we're taking at the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund is trying to work with legislators where possible, both at the state and local and national level, to try to rationalize some of these rules, because they're just crazy.
Well, let's go quickly to Travis. Travis, welcome to the food chain. Go ahead.
Good morning, Michael. Fabulous show as usual. Just kind of curious as to where the word free got lost in free enterprise and all that. And the idea that the government is there to save us and protect us, I kind of thought that was part of our own responsibility here.
Ah, great, great suggestions, great comments, Travis. Thank you very much. We're going to have to take a quick break, but maybe that's where we'll end this program. And we come back in our final segment, what happened to the free and free enterprise, and what happened to the responsibility in individuals, for individuals? Must we count on our government to protect us always, or can we count on the government? It seems like they're slipping enough these days, so I'm as frightened of them as I am of bad food. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. We have Steve Bemis with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. And we have Chili Bob Martin, the grower from the Salinas Valley, right back. Well, it's a tough question. Should farmers be allowed to sell us their farm fresh foods, or should we be forced to buy all of our foods from government-sanctioned corporations? And hey, if government is going to protect us from all danger, who will protect us from a government that can be bought and sold by the highest bidder? And if we look around, we don't have to look around too far to see what's happening with our government. So the notion of them providing all of our protection is kind of frightening too. Steve, do you think that small farmers can serve their constituency without rules and regulations?
Well, basically, I believe the answer to that is yes. I think the accountability for someone, my other commentator said, is strong. When you're dealing directly with the person that's raising your food, most farmers, big and small, but particularly small farmers who've chosen this very difficult way to earn a living, it's hard work, there's long hours, and the last thing any small farmer wants to do is to have headaches and problems as a result of having done the work poorly.
Wow, really?
I don't think that's a big risk.
Chili Bob, what about you? Do you think that small farmers can do without regulations?
No, I agree. I agree with Steve. Yes, they can, and it's no one is out there. It's a business, and to understand, your business is feeding the public you're going to take every opportunity to protect them, and you're not going to do anything. And there's enough knowledge out there about what creates problems that most growers are going to understand that, and they're going to take every precaution to protect their customers' health.
I always think that the farther one is away from the source of their food, the less control one has over what's in that food.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely.
I also think it goes the other way around too. You know, the farther you are away as a grower or a farmer from those who consume your food, the less you care about what goes in that food.
That's been our concern, Michael. The rules and regulations have been placed on the farmer and the first handler of the product. But what happens in the distribution chain?
Exactly.
Is it kept in its cold stage? Is the cold chain broken?
Mm-hmm.
How about the supermarket? What are they doing? What are they doing to protect the consumer? You look at these. They have these little rainforests now all over the produce sections, and kids think it's fun. They go up there and play with the produce because it's raining on it. And they're handling this stuff as they're wiping their noses.
But I just wonder how melamine found its way into baby formula. I mean, to do that, you have to be really far removed from whoever you're serving, don't you think?
That's the danger of dealing with a country like China, is that you just don't know what's in there. And is our government that's trying to protect us, are they doing the right thing? Are they looking enough at what's being brought in from overseas? No, I don't believe so.
That's a perfect example, because in this country, I think the melamine at the low levels that it has comes from the plastics and the other parts of the industrial processing system, where there's a leaching from the equipment into the milk, because there are tiny low levels in the milk here. And the FDA has really gone looking both ways on this.
Steve Bemis, Farm Consumer Legal Defense Fund. How do we as consumers support the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund? Because I would like to chip in my two bits.
Well, go to our website, www.farmtoconsumer.org.
Thank you very much.
That's the way to do it. Thank you.
Chili Bob, thank you for joining as well. Really appreciate you as always. Folks, stay tuned for next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.